can we confidently be able to reduce the amount of zinc oxide in nursery pig diets at a pharmacological level? We've done a couple of trials where we're looking at, you know, including a third of the total level of zinc, which obviously has a an economic advantage. But the benefit of the next trace, you know, TBZC, the hydroxy zinc product, is that, you know, we're not seeing a negative impact on performance. But what we are seeing is a significant reduction in the total amount of zinc in the fecal material and no impact to that fecal scoring, etc.
We want to thank the innovative companies and products whose support and trust make this podcast possible.
DietForge.ai, AI-powered feed formulation with non-linear ingredient modeling and real-time collaboration. Finally, modern software for modern nutritionists. Kemin invites you to optimize animal feed quality and safety with our portfolio of solutions. Learn more at kemin.com/ag. Evonik, we are sciencing the global food challenge.
Welcome to the Feed Science Podcast. I'm Adam Fahrenholz, coming from the Animal Food Manufacturing Program at North Carolina State University. Thanks for joining us. As always, on behalf of Wisenetics, we appreciate you seeing us on YouTube, listening on podcast, rate, like, review, all those good things. Give us comments about what you like about this episode and all of our previous episodes so that we can continue to bring you the content that you are interested in. Excited today to introduce our guest. Our guest is Matt Einerson. He is Vice President Sales and Business Development for North America at SAM Nutrition. Thank you for joining us, Matt. We appreciate having you.
Right on. Excited to be here, Adam.
You bet. So that's name, that's title, that's where you work. Can you give us a little bit more background for the audience of how you first got involved in animal nutrition and what it is you guys are working on there now?
Yeah, no, thanks for the introduction there. So I'm sat here in Winnipeg, Manitoba, which is home province for me. And so it was natural for me to want to attend the University of Manitoba. So I did a Bachelor of Science in Agriculture, you know, majoring in Animal Systems, and then didn't really know what to do after that. So I decided, as my friends would say, hit the snooze bar of life and continued on my studies in grad school. So I had the opportunity to study alongside Case Plaisir, looking at ruminant nutrition. And we were looking at trying to develop some recommendations for physically effective NDF in barley-based rations. At that time, you know, which was 25 years ago, approximately 25 years ago, so I'm dating myself a bit, but, you know, the story of physically effective NDF, Adam, was something that was relatively novel at the time. And in particular, there wasn't a lot of work that was done on barley-based rations. So was happy to do that. And then I parlayed that into a career focusing not on ruminant nutrition, interestingly enough, but on monogastric nutrition, which is where I've spent, you know, kind of 25 years of my experience has been focused in on that industry segment.
Gotcha. Very good. So moving around a little bit of kind of moving species, moving digestive types, as you mentioned there, but obviously still, you know, passionate about the industry. And from your perspective, what's kind of kept you passionate about it? What has kept you really involved in this kind of animal nutrition industry that, you know, most of our audience is coming from?
Well, I think most of the audience, you know, would agree that this industry is kind of unlike any other industry in the sense that we are, you know, truly engaged in what I think is noble work. I mean, we're endeavoring to nourish the world, you know, safely and efficiently. But it's a small industry at the end of the day. It's a global industry. It has a massive impact. And, you know, I think, you know, something like 65% of the world derives, you know, primary income from agriculture. But, you know, I've been fortunate enough throughout my career to have been able to travel to nearly 60 countries, you know, across, you know, five continents. And as an admirer of science and learning at heart, I've been able to kind of marry that passion of science and become a student of the science of business. And so I've been fortunate enough to, you know, sort of build and lead teams here in Western Canada, you know, running a feed and premix facility for a family-run business as well. And then, you know, working with Alltech overseas, you know, based out of Bangkok, where I moved my family over for 6 years, working with the great team of Alltech in Southeast Asia. It's provided a really amazing platform for learning, you know, for myself. And then being able to, you know, pivot to working with SAM Nutrition and kind of marrying all those experiences into one.
Excellent. So as you just mentioned, you're now with SAM Nutrition. We've had, you know, various different folks. We've had Roger Cochran. We've had Apoorva Shah on before. Can you tell us, you know, give us a bit of information about SAM Nutrition? We're going to talk a little bit about what Nexus Powered by SAM is, but let's start with SAM Nutrition and what is it that y'all do?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, what's really cool about the SAM Nutrition story is it's really truly the story of the American dream. You know, it's a story about a family. It's a story about the entrepreneurial spirit. So really what's been key to the success of SAM Nutrition, Adam, has been this sort of relentless focus on customer, you know, centricity. You know, we hear stories about the founders, you know, Sunil, starting this business up, you know, building deep and long lasting relationships with customers that have stood the test of time till today and provided us again a platform, you know, for growth. And then as well, this sort of deep desire to want to scale the business. And so our strengths have been, you know, sort of deeply rooted in, you know, supply chain management, you know, logistics, you know, and procurement, but also in terms of market insights. You know, as you mentioned, the CEO of Apoorva Shah, you know, second generation of the business. In every week, he publishes a market report, and it hits, you know, thousands of inboxes around the globe, you know, with great anticipation. But I'd say what really brought SAM Nutrition, you know, to the dance was really development and frankly, leadership around this concept of biosecurity, particularly as it pertains to, you know, the importation of feed ingredients. And I think Roger did a fantastic job, you know, addressing that on your show here recently. But that's given us an amazing platform to be able to build from that strength and provide a launch pad for Nexus Powered by SAM.
All right. So that leads right into that. So describe to us what the Nexus Powered by SAM is all about.
Yeah. So, you know, Nexus, we sort of define as the intersection of, you know, the where does science, you know, meet performance. And that for us is what Nexus really stands for. But implicitly, there's also, I think, a narrative there about, you know, connecting foreign manufacturers with, you know, domestic end users confidently. It's really that confidence piece that I think is so critical and where we've invested in so heavily, building out teams, you know, developing the QA and QC model to be able to ensure that those technologies can perform underneath the, you know, production systems that we're used to here in North America. So we've developed this model, and it's really based on needs, need identification. We'll take market insights, you know, we'll listen to the sales team, but a lot of times we get feedback from our customers. They may have a question about how do we resolve some particular issue? Can we provide a technology or product that looks similar to this or has this additional function? So we then go back to our supply chain network and we'll qualify, you know, a product or a technology that we think is going to have a fit. And that may be as simple as just, you know, making a few phone calls or sending a few emails. But oftentimes, there's a great deal of collaboration that is required. And so we'll work alongside those supply chain partners of ours, you know, looking at augmenting production or processes in order to ensure that that product can, you know, achieve, you know, an acceptance, you know, that's similar to what we would be, you know, seeing from a domestic manufacturing perspective. So there really is an interdependency, you know, with our QA and QC team. And I'd say it's a truly global team. Looking at doing that validation independently, which I think forms a critical part of that trust and transparency model. And then from there, we kind of graduate to the next step, which is doing that domestic research piece, which I think is so critical. And we've developed some really deep partnerships with some top tier research institutions across the United States. In particular, Kansas State University has been a great partner of ours, where we've done, I think, 8 trials, you know, to date. We've got 2 still on the go. But fundamentally, Adam, what we're doing here is we're trying to build a model that can build that trust and transparency, but can demonstrate that these technologies have a applicability within kind of commercial production systems in North America.
So I want to talk about the research part a little bit, but before we get there, when you're saying products and the technologies, like what kinds of products, what kind of technologies, you know, give us some examples of the kinds of things you guys have kind of pushed out to that customer base of yours.
Yeah. So really what brought us to the dance early on was our hydroxy trace mineral category. Mm-hmm. We launched that in 2020. When we launched that product category, one, we didn't have a brand. And secondly, we didn't have 20 years of research behind us to rely on. So we needed to kind of lean into that QA and QC primacy. And we did that successfully. So, and I believe we were testing arguably more than anybody else within that same industry segment to kind of build that confidence around purity and consistency. And we elevated it like an extra level, looking at things like crystalline morphology and understanding what the form and function was of this product, particularly within handling systems. Mm-hmm. And then we also looked at novel, sort of QA and QC, looking at, using NIR to be able to vet if there are adulterants within these particular products. The question about, what's the importance of research? Well, really that was kind of the next, logical evolution for us, was to look at how do we demonstrate these products' efficacy within an animal setting. So the initial goalpost for us was just demonstrating equivalency. So early on, we were able to see that, we could easily match equivalency. In fact, actually, in a lot of cases, we were outpacing, in terms of performance metrics, contemporaries within this industry class. And so now that's begun an additional evolution of our research, as we're looking at novel application at this point. So I'll give you some examples. We've just completed a couple of trials looking at, can we confidently be able to reduce the amount of zinc oxide in nursery pig diets at a pharmacological level. We've done a couple of trials where we're looking at, including a third of the total level of zinc, which obviously has an economic advantage. But the benefit of the next trace, TBZC, the hydroxy zinc product, is that, we're not seeing a negative impact on performance. But what we are seeing is a significant reduction in the total amount of zinc in the fecal material and no impact to that fecal scoring, et cetera. So it lends itself to a lot of confidence. And, we're parlaying that work into some research that we've done with looking at our next trace TBCC product, so copper, in nursery diets as well. Just got some data back from Kansas State University and expect papers to be published here within the next 3 or 4 months, looking at increasing the level of copper in phase two and seeing a statistical improvement in average daily gain in feed conversion. And this parallels nicely to what we're seeing on the poultry side as well. Some research that was done here just this past year, increasing the level of copper from a tribasic copper chloride, our next trace TBCC. In the starter phase, we saw a statistical improvement in performance, and that, of course, carries on throughout the grow-out period. And one trial in particular that we were very bullish on was a trial looking at replacing manganese sulfate with our next trace TBMC in a grow finish phase. This work was done at South Dakota State University. And what we saw was a 2 kilo increase in body weight gain throughout the grow-out period, which is very economically compelling. So we want to continue to look at that particular trial. And I'd say just lastly here, the one technology or product, if you will, that's been really successful for us within the last 12 months has been our polyphenol-based vitamin E replacement technology. And we want to continue to look at how can we replace vitamin E confidently, with an improvement in performance, not necessarily a negative impact in performance.
Sure. Excellent. Our guest again today is Matt Einerson. Matt is the Vice President Sales and Business Development for North America with SAM Nutrition. And we're talking about some of the different products and technologies they're working and their Nexus powered by SAM platform. One of the things that you've already talked about a little bit here and I think is worth kind of exploring further is this kind of dedication to the research side of it, right? And obviously there's an expense associated with that. There are certain things that always have to be done. Any new product, any new process, any new technology, there's an R&D kind of situation that's going to happen no matter who it is. But you guys clearly have kind of an additional interest beyond that of just, okay, it's not just R&D to get the product ready to go and get it on the shelf, so to speak, out in the marketplace and start, making profits off of it. You're really decided to delve into, we're really interested in the research. What's kind of driven that and wanting to really, focus on that You know, how much of that is internal? How much of that is giving things back to the customers? What's the thought process there?
Well, I think it's a really good question. And I think it's sort of a twofold response to that. I mean, one is there's an element of legitimization that is required. And that legitimization is not only because we're developing a new brand. You know, we need to put some weight behind sure. that, and we need to have some demonstration behind that. You know, but as well as there's some noise within these categories as well. And so we need to be able to confidently, you know, demonstrate to the end users that these products, you know, have a place within formulation and there's an economic response to that. But I think more importantly, though, it comes to, you know, sustainability. And that's such a buzzword right now.
Right.
But for sustainability for us at SAM Nutrition is really about stewardship, industry stewardship, you know, the communities that we serve within. And so I think it's critical importance that one, I mean, we're investing in academia, you know, so we're investing in, you know, innovation, and whether that, you know, directly impacts us at SAM Nutrition, it should hopefully impact, you know, the wider industry, you know, that we serve. You know, but moreover, you know, we want to see improvements in efficiency. We want to see, you know, improvements in performance, and we want our customers to be more profitable. And we want to, yep. you know, endeavor on this, as I mentioned earlier, you know, on this you know, noble journey that we're on, which is feeding the world safely and efficiently. And so I think that all kind of marries together nicely.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So as you go through that process of, you know, determining where to put resources, financial and otherwise, in doing research and in doing evaluation. What have you guys learned about taking that information and making it, you know, actually useful, not, you know, buzzwords, not hype, not any of those kinds of things, but actually being able to demonstrate value to people? How much of that is, yeah, you got to have the data if you want to give somebody value. How much of that is, you know, we've got to be able to relate it to something they're already doing. So we do have to be able to have a story there so that people can make connections. You know, because obviously, you know, and I would assume a lot of our audience knows as well. And coming from the academic standpoint, And you mentioned you guys are working on different things that are coming, and you've done some research, and then those articles are going to get published, right? And that's really important. That gets the data out there, and it's important for those of us in academia, and we appreciate you investing in that. And publishing is a part of what we do. But then again, everybody that's, you know, making decisions may not be sitting down and reading everything that comes out in the Journal of Animal Science or Journal of Poultry Science or pick the other 100 journals that are out there. So how does that all come together with this is the scientific data and this is the story? And how do you use that to be able to go to somebody in the market and say, let's talk about what actual value we provide?
I think that's a really good question, and you know, fundamentally for us, you know, when the research is complete, the paper doesn't sit on the shelf, mm-hmm. right? It forms part of our narrative. It forms part of the story, you know, that we're starting to tell. And for us, you know, marketing isn't necessarily just you know, glossy paper or a trade show booth. It's about education, mm-hmm. And so we need to take those data points, you know, build a narrative that we think is compelling, and then tell a story to the end user that we think is going to have an impact on them or solve a problem that we have. So the journey doesn't end when the paper is published. Mm-hmm. It just begins a new chapter, and that chapter is now on the commercialization of this information. And how do we then take that? And maybe we're looking at sort of novel application from a commercial perspective. You know, for a long time, you know, one of our product categories, you know, was really just based on, as an example, like the polyphenol based vitamin E replacement. I say vitamin E replacement. I grind my teeth when I say it because I think there's so much more to this product than just simply vitamin E. I think at some point, you know, Adam, we're going to be formulating to an antioxidant coefficient. And I think some of the work that we're doing now is going to form some of that baseline data that's going to help to, you know, sort of increase that or decrease that knowledge gap about what is the role of polyphenols within feeding systems today.
And I would assume too, in addition to, you know, taking that information, as you said, not letting it sit on the shelf and going and doing something with it, there's probably also if you want to do this successfully, kind of the feedback loop once it's out there, right? Like, okay, we did this at, you know, we did this research and we did it internally, or we did it at the university, we did it with, you know, contract research organization, a CRO somewhere, whatever. And we've got the information. And now we're going to use this to go and describe to a producer why this has value and why we would like to sell this to you. And we think it can be really beneficial. And then I would assume if you want that to continue to be really successful, you're sticking with that, right? And you're hearing back from them. And all right, this is what we saw in the quote laboratory, right? Because, you know, we are feeding birds on the ground and pigs on the ground, but we're doing it in a laboratory, in quotes, setting. I mean, it's houses and it's barns, but houses and barns at the university are different than what's, you know, out in the production world. And so I'd assume there's kind of that follow-up, and we're going to stick with you. All right, how does what you saw in the field actually correlate back to what we saw in the quote laboratory type setting of doing this research? And what does that inform about the next trials that we want to run in order to try to create, as you used the word earlier, a model for that? What's that process kind of feel like?
Yeah, I mean, I wish there was a well-defined process. You know?
Right.
Unfortunately, you know, with every trial is unique in that sense. And so, you know, here's an example of a case study where we had, this polyphenol, you know, product that we've had a lot of success in Europe, a lot of success in Latin America, relatively novel for the North American market. And so the pain point was, when vitamin E price started to trip over $20, it wasn't necessarily about what's the mode of action of your product, but how does it look, you know, compared to the other products that mm-hmm. sat within the industry. So we knew that there was a gap in terms of our research on the poultry side of things, from a North American perspective. We did a trial at University of Arkansas, and we really pushed the envelope in terms of how we were feeding vitamin E. In fact, in two of those treatments, we removed vitamin E completely. And what we were impressed to see was that we saw, again, no negative impact on performance. We saw the best performance without vitamin E in the diet at a high level of the polyphenol. Mm-hmm. Now, I should put a little asterisk or a footnote here, is that it's not a recommendation to remove right. vitamin E from the diet. But I think what we need to start to look into a little bit further is what is the role of these antioxidants? And if there is something that is more economically stable and maybe performs more elegantly in terms of those you know, blood biomarkers, you know, increasing glutathione peroxidase, et cetera, scavenging free radicals, well, then we need to look into that more deeply. And mm-hmm. so we can't just rely on one data point. So what we've done, and we're just kicking it off right now, maybe I'm getting cart before the horse a little bit, Adam, but we just kicked off a trial with Colorado Quality Research. It started mm-hmm. this week, where we're reprising that trial. It's going to look very similar. We've narrowed down the treatments just a little bit, and we're including vitamin E across the board to ensure that we are at least meeting the NRC minimum requirement. But we need more than one data point in order for us to be able to confidently come to the market and say, this isn't an anomaly, this isn't an outlier, this is now repeatable.
That makes a lot of sense. So I've got a couple kind of end questions here, but before we jump into those one or two, anything else you'd like to share about kind of what's coming with Nexus that you guys are working on?
Yeah, I appreciate you asking the question here. So, you know, for us, we've built a lot of momentum, up until this point. So the momentum that SAM Nutrition had over 22 years has now allowed us to sort of dovetail. And we launched this Nexus powered by SAM, platform, specifically looking at feed technologies. And that was in January of this past year. So kind of next step for us is going to continue that research drive that we talked about. We're going to continue to evaluate new technologies that come down the line and measure them as to whether or not there's economic applicability, for the domestic market. We're also looking at international expansion. You know, we just launched here in Canada 9 months ago. We had humble aspirations of, just trading into one or two provinces. And fast forward 9 months, we're fully coast to coast, operating out of a network of eight warehouses here. Mm-hmm. We just opened up our first office in Latin America, in Chile. We're already having some success into Central America. So we're going to put, some effort in terms of growing out that market, because we think there's a lot of potential for us. And I think the last thing is we're just looking to, continue to launch new products. So we've got on the on kind of the docket for this year, Adam, is going to be a GAA product. So guanidinic acetic acid serves as a precursor for creatine, lean tissue deposition, arginine sparing. We've got a great partnership with a company there that we think is going to provide us a good platform for that market segment. We've got we just finished a trial on a local trial done on our hydroxy 25 vitamin D3 product. We've seen a lot of movement in that space. We've been maybe conservative with our approach, you know, but we went to China. We went and audited these facilities. Let me tell you, there's a spectrum of manufacturing that exists. And if you're not there, you know, auditing those facilities with Roger and his team does, you're not going to have the confidence. And so we did that. You know, we've been able to eliminate a lot of those risk points that we think, you know, occurs within the production process. Finished the local trial work. We're scaling up in with some commercial trial work here set for the summertime. And then lastly, is we've developed a partnership with a company called Sunhigh, which I know is a good partner of the Wisenetics podcast as well. One of the largest enzyme manufacturing companies globally, a true R&D powerhouse. And so we partnered on what we're calling our Nexzyme precision nutrition platform. We're going to launch four enzymes. Flagship is going to be our heat stable phytase there. And the great thing about that is it comes along with some domestic research done at Kansas State University, University of Guelph as well. So we're excited about that. But I think, you know, kind of critical for us is going to continue to keep our ear to the ground, you know, continue to listen to the market, tap into that entrepreneurial spirit and be dynamic and look for those opportunities to bring value to the end users.
Very good. Excellent. So the last question I think I'm going to ask, and you know, we're going to go away a little bit from, you know, the specifics of exactly what you guys are working on, but think about this more from a general perspective. And for those folks in our audience that are either professionally in, or if they're maybe graduate students, or are thinking about going into this area, kind of this area of, R&D, let's call it, right? What are the things that you've seen as you've been with a few different companies, you've worked in a few different countries, and you're now working in this area where, you know, we're developing new products and all this kind of stuff. What are the things that you see in the folks that are most successful in this space that kind of allows them to grow in it, right? What are the types of habits or mentalities that they bring to it that makes them successful at the end of the day?
Yeah, I think it's a really good question. I've been fortunate enough that I've, getting longer into my career that I've been able to, coach and mentor and build teams. And frankly, that's not necessarily something that I've been innately gifted in. It's something that I think is a journey and we learn by experience. But I'd say kind of if I reflect back on my career and there's been sort of two things that I think have, you know, allowed me to, you know, continue to accelerate. And that's been one, push myself outside my comfort zone. I didn't have a background in agriculture, frankly. Mm-hmm. I was interested in the sciences. There wasn't a lot of jobs when I looked around at my fellow classmates and 200 of them in my biochemistry class going, we all going to fight for the pipette. I knew that there was, opportunity in agriculture and it was based around science, which I had a passion for. And so I had to push myself outside of my comfort zone. Graduating in ruminant nutrition and quickly, pivoting to monogastric nutrition. Again, another story about pushing myself outside of my comfort zone, leaving the comforts of the prairies of Manitoba to, hole up in Bangkok, Thailand, with that pressure comes growth. And I think growth kind of, you know, parlays to what I think is kind of another critical point is be curious, always ask questions, particularly if you're starting in a new phase of your career. If you come in on day one and you know everything, you know, it's going to become fairly obvious at day 90 that you don't know anything. Yeah. And so take those opportunities, those sort of foundational time that you're given to ask as many questions as you can, stupid questions, onboard as much knowledge as you can. But I think in particular, when you're in a commercially facing role, so often it's easy to show up in front of a customer or an industry peer and just spew your rhetoric or your marketing or your research, and you never took the time to learn about the customer and their needs. So that curiosity, you know, whether it's in terms of career development and personal development, also plays a role in terms of being, you know, commercially persuasive, taking the time to ask the questions.
Absolutely. It's one of my favorite words, and it's come up a number of times. We're somewhere around the 100 podcast mark, and I've shared that as being one of my favorite. We've had a number of guests that have shared something similar, right? That curiosity. I've mentioned it's what I'm interested in when I'm looking at graduate students, right? And would this person be good at this? Are they curious? Are they, you know what? I don't know how that works. Let me go see how that works. Or I don't know anything about that company. Let me go learn about that company. It makes such a huge difference. I think that's great advice. Absolutely. All right. Our guest today, again, has been Matt Einerson. Matt is the Vice President for Sales and Business Development in North America for SAM Nutrition. We've been talking about Nexus powered by SAM and a number of other things related to kind of the R&D space in animal nutrition. Matt, I've really appreciated our conversation. It's been a lot of fun.
Likewise, Adam. My pleasure.
You bet. All right. On behalf of Wisenetics, I'm Adam Farnholz from North Carolina State University. Thanks for listening. Thanks for watching. Again, please give us comments, feedback, like and review, all that good stuff on your platform of choice. We appreciate your attention to our podcast, and we hope to continue to bring you the kind of content that you're interested in. And until then, we'll talk to you the next time.
Do you feel overwhelmed with mundane tasks that eat up your valuable time? It's time to reclaim your schedule and focus on what truly matters. Get your time back with elite remote talent without the time zone hassle. Delegate $10 an hour tasks to focus on more $1,000 an hour tasks. Schedule your free strategy call at wisevas.io.